Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to From the Highway, a podcast brought to you by IlliniBoard.com. I am on the highway. I am coming up, what is this exit? Coming up on exit 51, Oglesby Hennepin. Wait, this is the Starved Rock exit, right? I think this is where I get off to go to Starved Rock. Yes, I believe that's the case. It is exactly 4:18 p.m. It's crazy that I can be at this exit by 4:18 p.m. after a 1 p.m. And that's not driving fast. That's not, like, I haven't exceeded 10 miles over the speed limit yet. Cruise is set at 79. In a 70. Because the basketball game got off at 2:46, so an hour and 46-minute basketball game, started right at 1 p.m. It's a BTN Plus game, so it's only, there aren't, like, massive commercial breaks, there aren't, you know, an extended halftime, anything like that. Game was a blowout. Refs weren't blowing their whistles in the second half. Just let it go. Get this game over with. Done at 2:46. Oh, I guess you... See, I'm sitting here assuming everyone knows what I'm doing. I wanted to attend both games today. Both the basketball game at 1 p.m. in Champaign and the football game at 6:30 p.m. in Madison. And with a 3.5-hour drive between the cities, I believe I can pull it off. In fact, as of right now, I don't know what game day traffic's going to be. Okay, so that's the big thing here. As of right now, I have secured a parking spot. In fact, let's just get to the first question. One of the first questions on Slack is, where are you parking? So, Eric from Slack, also the guy who put together the video the last time I was here in Wisconsin, Eric did me a solid by talking to some friends he knows, some alums who live in that neighborhood right next to Camp Randall. If you've never been to Camp Randall, the north and the east side of the stadium are the campus, and the south and the west side of the stadium are houses, neighborhoods. There are people that live across the street from Camp Randall. You know, imagine like lot 31, but that's your house right there. And I think it's even closer than that. Like, the stadium looms over those houses. It'd be like, like you cross Kirby, and then there's, instead of the parking lot for the State Farm Center, there's like houses right there. That's what Camp Randall is. So in that neighborhood, 3 blocks from the stadium, I have secured a parking spot in someone's driveway. I've been told that they have left the side garage door open for me to run in and use the restroom. I've been told there's a beer in the fridge for me, although I probably won't drink that because every second counts here. And they said it's an 8-minute walk to the stadium. So when I get to the stadium, I still have to go get my press pass. So there's all kinds of things that could go wrong to where I'm not in my seat at kickoff. But I know that the kickoff, as of right now, is 6:40 p.m. exactly. Not 6:30, but 6:40. And I know that TV has put in a 5-minute slide on that. So it is possible that if a game is going long somewhere, or if they want to, there's a 5-minute they could kick it at 6:45 if they want. But 6:40 is the earliest they could kick off. Right now, if I get there at 6:17, 23 minutes to walk, to use the restroom in this person's house, walk to the stadium, get my credential, go in, go up the elevator, get to the press box, get to my seat by 6:40. I think it's doable, but there might be... Look, it's game day traffic, and yes, Wisconsin games aren't highly attended, but it's still 70 8,000 people or whatever that are going to be trying to get there at game time. I've chosen a circuitous route around Madison to get to the neighborhood without having to go like past where the stadium is and all the main streets like Regent Street there and all that. So even with that route, currently says I'll pull into that driveway at 6:17, giving me 23 minutes to get to the stadium, get my credential, get to my seat. Why do this, Robert? Because fun. I enjoy fun things, and I enjoy doing fun things, and this is fun to me. Never done it in my life, gone to attended an Illini football game and an Illini basketball game in the same day. Why not leave once the game's a blowout, because I know it's a blowout, to assure myself of being there at kickoff? I don't have an answer for that other than I wanted to see if I could do it. Watch all of one game, watch all of another game. It's kind of funny how many people down on like press row are like, what are you doing here? Like people from the school. 99% chance you'd be in Madison. Oh, I will be. Once I hit the road. Okay, so since I'm bored, I'm passing I-80 right now, crossing over I-80. Over I-80 at 4:24 p.m. You're kidding. Like, I thought I'd be right about here at 4:45. So I really am. You know what? Not even that. Because I was figuring game's over at 3. Took me a little bit to get out of the lot. A little bit of traffic around the State Farm Center. If I'm staying to the end of the game, there are going to be people leaving with 4 minutes left. And they're going to be clogging up some of the streets. But it really didn't. There was no. Like, I got right on to Florida, headed east to Lincoln, all the way north on Lincoln to 74. Was the route I mapped out to get on the interstate the earliest and then shoot out of town, because I just didn't want to go west through Champaign, try to get to Mattis or Prospect or anything like that. I figured, yes, I'm doubling back a little bit, but then Lincoln's a straight shot to 74, and 74 heads straight to Bloomington. Do we have our first cop here? Is there a police officer hiding behind those barricades there? Oh, no. It was just another set of barricades. Sorry, I'm on cop watch here. I put up a thing on Slack that said, hey, give me questions on board. I am now going to answer those questions. The first one was, where are you parking? The answer is at a house near the stadium. And really the only wild card here, you know, I can just see this. I'm rolling into town. It's like 10 after 6. I'm like, I can see the stadium on the horizon. I have a half hour to get in my seat. This will work. And then I'll come around a corner and it's just stopped of traffic trying to get close to the stadium in this neighborhood. And I'll be like 2 blocks from the house, but it'll take 12 minutes to get to the house or whatever. That's my one fear here. Hey, you know, making great time north of 80, 4:26 p.m. now. We're on a roll. Okay, let us go to the questions and answer them. Okay, let's go with the first one here. Best truck stop or rest stop when driving to an Illini road game? Okay, I should note, I told people that I'm limiting the questions to Illini football, Illini basketball, and road trips. Best truck stop or road stop when driving to an Illini road game? Well, I've mentioned before, and this is Nebraska only. Although, I guess when I went to that Kansas City. Yeah, I think when I went... No, I did go through St. Louis on that one. I can't remember. But I've mentioned before that when I head straight across the state going toward Nebraska, because I'll just go to Hannibal and then stay on oh, what's that highway in Missouri? 24, 36, whatever it is. And I just take it all the way straight across the state. I always stop in Hull, Illinois, at this one, or is it in Barrie? Is it in Barrie or is it in Hull? I think it's in Barrie. Is it in Barrie? Okay, you go past Pittsfield. Yeah, I think it's Barrie. There's a truck stop there. I always stop there. I don't know why. Always do. If I'm going east, I've eaten more meals at the McDonald's in Oakwood. For some reason, that exit just before Danville is my, hey, I better fill up the tank of gas. Hey, it's time to get breakfast. Like, you know, the day Bielma was hired when I was driving to Penn State, I went and got breakfast at that Oakwood McDonald's at like 5 a.m. as I was driving all the way to Penn State that day. If I'm going to Columbus, if I'm going to Purdue, if I'm going to, you know, anywhere else, that's my spot. I don't know why. Like, it's so close to Champaign, but it just seems that I'm always, it's often in the morning, and so I just, all right, well, I'll stop at that, I'll get on the road for a little bit, and then I'll stop at that truck stop, because there's two truck stops there, so I can get gas, I can, you know, I don't have to go to the McDonald's, I can get whatever, but I'm in Oakwood all the time. And then, gosh, for other ones, so like going north, I do it so often by train. Like Minnesota's always train, Michigan is always train, Michigan State is always train, Penn State is often train. And so for those, there's not road stop. So really, it's that place in Barrie. I think the address would be Barrie, and it's that place in Oakwood. I guess I like stopping at truck stops in Illinois. Maybe that's it. Maybe I just don't want to stop somewhere in... I want to give my money to the great state of Illinois. Yeah, I think that's it. I can't think of anything on the longer road trips. Like Maryland, I take the train. Rutgers, train or fly. I've flown to Maryland before as well. West Coast, fly. Nebraska, I drive. Yeah, I think that's it. Iowa, I always stay in the Quad Cities because I want to stay in that stupid state. You know why I don't want to stay in the stupid state? My blood just boils here. Did you know, folks? I mean, there's a game in Iowa this year. I'll probably write about this when it happens. Did you know, in Iowa City, there is a charge on your hotel bill called a destination marketing fee, and it is voluntary. It's how they got it passed. It's they like, oh, it's not a tax, and they wanted money for like the local Iowa City Tourism Board or whatever, and so they're like, okay, well, stupid people who stay here from out of town won't know this. We will put something on their hotel bill, put somewhere in the fine print that it's voluntary, and if you ask at the front desk, they'll take it off. But if you don't ask, that means you wanted to donate to local tourism and volunteered to give that money. And unless you read the fine print of your hotel bill, you have no idea you just did that. I'm not a stickler. I'm not a guy who like, hey, can I get $3 back because my DoorDash order was wrong? I don't care about that stuff. But because it's Iowa City and because they said, oh, it's voluntary. Well, why didn't you? Well, we told you if you had read the seventh page of the disclaimers that you got when you received your hotel bill, you would have seen that all you had to do is go to the front desk and ask for that $7 back. Just weird to me that that's even like legal. Well, we don't want to do a tax and it won't pass, but what if we pass something that's voluntary? It's not voluntary. Everybody pays it without knowing it, and you take the money. Iowa City equals crooks. What have we learned today? Crooks. No one should ever go to that place. You just shouldn't. Bad people do bad things with your money. Go Illini. That's not the end. Sorry, I always say Go Illini at the end. It's not the end. I just want to rant on Iowa City. Okay, I'll get to the questions. Favorite game during the John Gross era, a.k.a. A Bright Spot in the Darkness. I'm trying to think of anything besides Tyler Griffey, Indiana. It's got to be Tyler Griffey, Indiana, right? I mean, okay, my personal favorite, because of other reasons, was Revonte Rice three-pointer to beat Missouri. First time I had gone back to the game in 15 years. I've been through that story a dozen times. That's the most meaningful one to me. But that's for personal reasons. And that's all I'll say about that. But yeah, it's either the Tyler Griffey layup to beat Indiana, watching with my wife and son at home, or it's Miami, Brandon Paul going off. I mean, the game gets remembered because, you know, DJ Richardson missed a three-pointer. It went out of bounds off of Miami player. They gave it to Miami instead of Illinois. There was no way to overturn it. That led to the NCAA adding you can review balls out of bounds in the final 2 minutes. Yet another rule changed by a mistake the refs gave to Illinois. But yeah, that there was such a fight in that game. That team was so, like, Brandon Paul in that second half against Miami was great. So if I could go with top three, it's Tyler Griffey against Indiana. It's Brandon Paul second half against Miami in the tournament, nearly leading us to an upset of a 2 seed and a berth in the Sweet 16. And it's Revonte Rice beating Missouri with a 3. Yeah, I think that those are clearly my 1, 2, and 3. How high will Illini basketball have to be seeded to get the St. Louis-Chicago Indy route? Good question. I can explain it. The top 16 seeds are protected seeds in that they will try to place those 16 teams close to their campus. If you are the 16th team, meaning you are the last 4 seed, you're probably not getting close to your campus because they've gone through everyone else to get them close. And then often it's like, okay, well, no spots left anywhere in the Midwest. So we have to send the final 4 seed. Auburn has to go to Boise. It's Boise, not Boise. My son lives in Idaho. I've been corrected on that many times. Boise, not Boise. Boise. And so, yes, you need to be at least like the 14th out of those 16 teams to have a, you know, shot. But if you're a 1 seed or a 2 seed, they are looking at the 8 regional sites. And the number one team, it's basically straight up, okay, for the first and second round, Duke is the number one overall seed. Greensboro is one of our sites. Duke goes to Greensboro. And then the number two seed, you know, the number two, number one seed. So the number two overall team, still a 1 seed. They'll say, okay, this is Baylor. And Baylor is going to go to Oklahoma City. Okay. Number three is North Carolina is the number three overall seed. We're also going to send them to Greensboro because that's closest to both campuses. And so, you know, again, it's not the teams in that regional. It's the little pod of 4 teams, and it doesn't have to go anywhere. It just goes close to campus. So North Carolina plus anybody else bracketed with North Carolina goes to Greensboro. Okay, Greensboro is done. Now we go to the number 4 seed, and it's UConn, and they go to the regional in Albany. And so, and then they just keep going and keep going and keep filling. And then when they get down to the last team, even if it's like UCLA is the last 4 seed, the only thing we have left is a spot in Albany too bad, so sad. UCLA, you go there. So, say Illinois is a 3 seed, very good chance you're still getting St. Louis. Unless Missouri is a 2 seed and, I don't know, Iowa State is a 2 seed and they both get St. Louis and then it's taken before it gets to us. So, you know, that's the thing. But if Illinois, say we're a 2 seed, say we're like the number 7 team in the country, and we're a 2 seed, almost certainly getting St. Louis. Unless there are seeds higher than us that are closer to St. Louis than us. And really, that's only Missouri. So that's how it works for the first 2 rounds. Then for the Midwest, the West, you know, all the regions, the 1 seed certainly gets the closest thing to campus. So the reason our route might not be St. Louis, Chicago, Indianapolis, if we went to the Final Four this year. The reason it might be, I don't know where the other 3 regionals are. It could be St. Louis, Houston, Indianapolis, wherever those regions are, is if Purdue is higher than us. Maybe if Iowa State is higher than us, they're pretty good this year. So you could see where, you know, Iowa State is a 1 seed and the closest of those regionals is Chicago for them and they get it. So obviously you want to be a 1 seed to assure your path. So the only way for Illinois to assure the path of St. Louis, Chicago, Indy is to be above Purdue and Iowa State and on the 1 line. Because then you're guaranteed we're going to get them as close as possible in the first and second round, and they get the choice of region since they're the 1 seed, and we're going to put them in the Midwest. So those are the things to watch if we are that good. And if we're just a 4 seed, then you're hoping we're a high enough 4 seed that we can get St. Louis and then it's very close to campus. If we are a 2 seed, almost certainly in St. Louis, and then it depends on Purdue and maybe Iowa State if they got a 1 seed to steal Chicago. So that's how the whole thing works of can we have this reverse route of 2005. It'll all play out like that. So will Purdue and Iowa State to lose? I don't think there's anybody else in the Midwest that would possibly be higher. I'm trying to think. Yeah, it would just be like Wisconsin's not gonna be a 1 seed. They just lost to BYU by a billion. Yeah, I think it's just the threats are Purdue and Iowa State, I think. Okay. Yeah, I think that covers the question. Let us continue. Let's see, it's 4:41 p.m. Just starting to get dark. I am no idea, but I'm reminded of the Seinfeld where Kramer was painting the white dashes on some parkway in New York City. There is no one out here. I could just swerve around lane to lane and nobody would care. I could see the taillights of 2 cars and the headlights of 2 tractor trailers right now. I could just swerve around. Swerve and swerve. Okay. Next question. Thoughts about the loss of seniors, particularly our quarterback, for next year's starters. Do we portal QB, or do we have something ready to go on the current roster? How much portal are we looking at? Good question. Hold on. I got to put this down. I got a smudge on my glasses, and it's right in my vision point. And so I'll put this on my knee. Cleaning the glasses, we're cleaning, we're desmudging, we're smudging, we're cleaning. Leaning over to grab my coat, the sleeve of my coat to clean my glasses. I shifted on the old bladder there. It's the first moment of like, hey, maybe we need a restroom soon. Sorry. Not going to happen for at least an hour and a half. So deal with it, bladder. All right, seniors, starters. Look, it's going to be... Next year is a restructured team. This year was a most everyone back. Next year, new offensive line, new quarterback, new a lot. Everywhere you look. You know, Luke Altmaier's gone. Hank Beatty's gone. Four starting offensive linemen are gone. Starting tight end is gone. Several starting defensive linemen. Your main outside linebacker, your main middle linebacker, and several guys in the secondary, all gone. So, I don't think there's any question. Everybody gets into the whole, we don't rebuild, we reload, and everything else. It will be the most turnover for Bielema since the 22 into 23. So, I think the season would probably, right now, we don't know what the portal is, we don't know what the... Right now, the season is probably most similar to 23. Schedule's a little harder. Don't know who the quarterback will be. There's a lot of question marks. There were very few question marks this year, a ton next year. How heavy will we go portal? I don't know. It's a really good question. Before this year, I would have said not very much at all. Because we have always leaned heavily development. But as each year has gone by, we've gotten a little more portal and a little more portal. And as teams like Indiana prove, you can just build a team out of the portal. And, you know, I remember asking Coach Bielema that question in a press conference of, it was the preseason press conference last year in 24. And I mentioned how he only had 9 portal guys. And the brand new coach at Indiana was bringing in 51 new players or whatever it was. And I'm like, what do you think of that? Like, what are your thoughts on that level of, you know? And, you know, he answered that they want to be more of a developmental program, but, you know, there's opportunities in the portal. And, you know, he wasn't trashing it by any means. He didn't say, oh, they have no chance with all these. I think it was 41 brand new players, something like that. Obviously, it's worked. So, obviously, whoever gets the Auburn job, whoever gets the Florida job, whoever gets the LSU job, whoever gets any of these jobs is going to be expected to, well, in the portal in January, you can find an entire playoff team. Go do that, please. Oh, you don't think you can do that? Kurt Cignetti did that 2 times. So, it's possible. So, as I've written several times, Cignetti kind of broke college football here. He just did. Everyone now expects, like, Auburn administration, 100%, whoever gets the Auburn job, you need to be in the playoff next year. That's the expectation. Sorry, we have some talent here. Go find more. If Indiana did it, we can certainly do it with twice the resources here. That's how college football has been broken. We've never really signed up for that. And as I've said, the Cignetti... You know, Indiana has 5 or 6, maybe 7 draft picks on that team. Like, they hit on so many of their transfers and so many of the guys they brought from James Madison. That, you know, we'll see if he can find 6 or 7 more NFL players in the portal for next year or whatever. Look, it's incredibly impressive what he's done. They might win a national championship. They absolutely destroyed us. But it's still, there's a reason no one else at any other program has done that. Because your hit rate, when you just dump the roster you inherit and bring in your own players from your former school, the hit rate has to be immense, and it has been for them. They went out and found the best QB in the portal 2 years in a row. It's insane. Anyway, all of that to say... Because Cignetti has done that, from Oregon to Miami, everybody is like, yeah, when this whole portal thing started, we were hesitant, and we've all grown up on development, and the best programs like Alabama and Georgia were all about recruit high-end players and their third year before they go off the NFL. They're superstars for you because you've developed them in your system for several years, and you just keep rocking and rolling with these third-year players and win a lot of titles. And now it's kind of shifted to like, no, I think you can just do it in the portal. Porter's fine. So it'll be interesting to see how much Bielma's influenced by that. Because this is a year where brand new offensive line, brand new everything. So it's going to be interesting. Like, we're not going to replace Luke, right? Even if Ethan Hampton gets that sixth year and he's, you know, he was brought in here to learn the system for a year and then be our starter for a year. Even if Carson Boyd is a superstar redshirt sophomore, sorry, redshirt freshman next year, which I believe he is. The kid is incredible, I think. It's still going to be a step back from, you know, Luke's a top 10 quarterback in college football right now. So, yeah, I've already accepted next year's step back. If it's not a step back, it's an incredible job, and we probably went heavily portal to fill these gaps. Okay, I think that gets to that question. Next question. Laugh out loud. Which movement from a Mahler symphony best represents each Illini football head coach in your fandom? This is so niche. Four people will get this, but those four people will enjoy this. This is going to be rough. I'm going to skip Mike White and Makovic and start with my sophomore year of college with Lou Tepper. Lou Tepper. I just made myself laugh. Lou Tepper's Mahler's 10th. The four classical music fans just laughed out loud because Mahler's 10th famously was unfinished because he died. And so there have been performances. So I think one of his contemporaries finished for him, like finished the first movement, kind of found a way to wrap it up. But I believe there have been performances where it's just played and then it stops, like where his pen stopped. It just stops. So yeah. May know that Detlef in his Those Were the Days refers to Lou Tepper as Coach Death Penalty. And so I am unable to see anything else than Mahler's 10th, the first movement, the only movement, the movement that stops and ends an incredible run of symphonies and just stops, like 1996, 97, and the 18-game losing streak. Enough about that. Ron Turner, let's think here. I don't know. My brain is going to Mahler 1 first movement. The little diddle-dum, 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 diddle-dum. Like, Mahler's first symphony is his, I mean, it's his first symphony. But it's simple. Right? Like, there's a lot of violins. There's not, like, depth of, there's just like, hey, let's have the violins play with a little melody. There wasn't, like, long-lasting, like, Mahler 5, Mahler 9. There wasn't, like, deep themes. It was just light and airy in the first movement, and it's just a guy writing his first symphony trying to play out with, like, what do I do with the violins here? So I'm giving Ron Turner Mahler 1 first movement. Ron Zook. I'm thinking three, I'm thinking three because it starts out great. And for me, I mean, three is great, but it never really gets to the first movement again. Like, and then the choral stuff, like, yeah, I'm thinking three. Mahler three. We got to use all the movements here because it's like, one is great, and then it never just doesn't get there for me. A lot of people love Mahler three. But that's Zuck, right? Like, Rose Bowl, it's going to be everything, and then just five more years, and I'm like, it's not there. Four more years, I guess. Like, I thought it would... Why is it... It's just not what it was. There you go. Tim Beckman. It's seven... I'm just going symphonies here. I've decided I'm not going movements. It's just seven. Seven goes last on my list of Mahler symphonies. Everybody has their own list. Some people will probably put seven first. He's just seven. He's just Mahler seven. Lovie Smith. I'm going to skip over Cuban. It's pointless. I got Lovie Smith is the fifth movement of Mahler 5. The fourth movement is maybe the most famous thing Mahler has written. Listen to me. If you are in a... I just need to calm down. This is stressing me out too much. I got to stop thinking about this. I just need to calm. I just need to chill for a bit. If you're ever in that mood, Mahler 5, fourth movement. No human being can be stressed after those 19 minutes. Mahler 5, fourth movement. Next time you're stressed, Mahler 5, Gustav Mahler, fifth symphony, fourth movement. Lovie is the fifth movement, which is fine. Mahler 5 remains my favorite symphony, but it's because of 4, and even the second movement, but because of the fourth movement. Fifth never had a chance. And because of the Bears' tenure and the Super Bowl and the Urlacher defenses, the fifth movement of Lovie didn't have a chance. Different kind of sport. Recruiting. He did land talent, but the Garrick McGee offense and the defense never getting there and the stuff with his son and Lovie is the fifth movement of Mahler 5. Brett Bielema. So easy. Mahler 2. It's known as the Resurrection Symphony. Okay? When Gustav Mahler wrote the final movement of this symphony, there's some letter he sent to someone. I can't remember who he sent it to. There's a letter he sent to someone that basically said, I can hardly believe I did this. Like, I know that I just did something so magnificent that when I was done doing it, I couldn't believe I did it. Like, it wasn't of me or from me. It was a muse. It was God. It was an extra part. Like, it was something else beyond me that used me to put this glorious music into print and that will come out in symphonies for centuries. And it was about resurrection. I mean, it gets really dark with the when the choral solos come in and there's like a mezzo soprano, like deep singing in German, longing kind of thing. And then it hits the most positive, uplifting music possible of, you know, darkness, 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 resurrection. Hey, that sounds like Illinois football. God, I should have ended on this. I nailed that. I absolutely nailed that, and only four people will know. All right, this car is going my speed. Hold on, I gotta put the little flap up there. Okay. You know, when you're driving along, I'm in the right lane. There's a car in the left lane going my exact same speed. So you just have, you get that feeling of like, oh, are they trying to like wave? Is this somebody who knows I'm doing this thing? But no, it was a woman with Wisconsin plates who I can see into her car is flipping through a podcast menu, and she's not really thinking about her speed, so it's just matched the speed of the car next to you. It is 4:59. This sign here says that the next exit is Oregon Sycamore. Folks, we are scooting. Again, cruise is set. Nine over rule. I'm just going 9 miles over the speed limit. Rolling along here. You wrote the football depth chart article a few weeks ago. Was pleasantly surprised by how things looked. Still soaking in this season. Do you have any thoughts on how next season might look? We should have a more favorable schedule than this year. Well, that's a good point. Like, I've always said that, you know, I said before this season, 26 would be worse than 25. But that's because 25 was setting up to be easier than it was. Like, before the season, that one strength of schedule thing had us as the 17th most difficult Big Ten schedule at 18. And once all is said and done, we're going to be like 6th out of 18 in schedule difficulty. So the season didn't really play out like it was supposed to. So, all right, he included the schedule. UAB, Duke, and SIU all at home. Big Ten home games with Iowa, Nebraska, Oregon, Purdue. Road games, Maryland, Michigan State, Northwestern, Ohio State, UCLA. Yeah. That road slate, Maryland, Michigan State, Northwestern, UCLA, like those are four very winnable road games. So yeah, I think I do need to revisit how, in my brain, I need to revisit how hard that schedule is going to be. Because it's not that bad. I guess I kind of answered some of these questions when going through the other question before, but do you have thoughts on how next season might look? My overall feeling is it's great. It's very comforting to, I mean, we should get our 8th win tonight, and I'll hate these words if we lose tonight, but it's very comforting to know I don't have to worry if 5-7 happens next year because of all this turnover. You know, 2022, 2024, and 2025 have told me that if it is a 5-7 year, it's a Barry Alvarez-like 5-7 year, or a Kirk Ferentz-like 5-7 year, where next year it's going to be better. Everybody has a down year here and there. This was our down year. I'm not expecting us to be Alabama and win at least nine every year. You know, Georgia's down years are 9-3. I'm not looking for that. I'm just saying when Iowa was being rebuilt, or when Wisconsin was being rebuilt, and then Alvarez in like his 7th season had a 4-win season, didn't really mean much other than the year before they had lost everyone and then they had to rebuild and they only won 4 games and then they got right back to winning 9-10. So it's just very comforting for me. That's my thoughts toward next year. That, like, even if it, whoever they portal, even if there's not a fit at quarterback, whatever, it's it's all good. We'll get it right back in 27. Like, I have that kind of confidence now. And so, yes, we're going to be bottom 10 in returning production in power conference football. We're going to be, when those returning production rankings come out, we're going to be like 119th nationally when mixed in with the group of five schools. And, I'm okay. Like, that's fine. Like, I'm okay with got a little off year here. Hopefully the next time we have a dip, it's only down to 6-6 or 7-5, and we just keep building. You know, I think we're going to see a fair number of freshmen. Like, I think we'll see more players in this class, more freshmen from the 26 class play as true freshmen than we've seen under Bielema yet. One, it's his best class, but two, you know, some of them are talented enough to do that, and we have spots open for freshmen to get into that lineup. So I think we'll see some of that. Okay. Sorry, I'm... be cautious of slow or stop traffic ahead. Okay? Just want to be safe here. I'm around some more cars now. We're getting closer to Rockford. So... just want to... Maybe that's a... maybe it's some paving thing and that's nothing's going on the weekend. Like, I see all the orange signs. Like, there's no speed limit change signs or anything else. But it's got, like, the caution might be stop traffic ahead. But maybe that's just during the week. Well, anyway. Okay. I'm less concerned. I hope that answers the question. The schedule's a little better than it looked compared to 25. 26 isn't terrible. It's not what Wisconsin had to face this year. But yeah, there's going to be a lot of turnover, and September's going to be interesting. I'm really glad we got out of that Missouri game, because we would not be ready to play Missouri unless their coach leaves and they have a whole bunch of roster upheaval. That would be nice. Anyway, thoughts on off-season assistant coach movement for Illini football? I think a lot hinges on these last two games as far as, does the defensive improvement continue? We pay a lot for coordinators, and therefore much is expected of coordinators. I'm not sure with the defense, you know, after Washington, after you know, giving up 450 yards to Purdue, things like that. Oh, maybe we are changing lanes here. Oh, are we down to one lane? I see flashing yellow lights ahead. Safety first. We're braking. I'm stopping talking football. We're looking. Oh, maybe that's just a tow truck on the shoulder. Gosh, all of this, like, so many. Watch out for slow or stop traffic. Stop traffic ahead. Heads up. You people who drive 39 north probably know exactly where I'm at right now. But all these signs, but there's nothing... Yeah, it's just got to be the number of cars on the road right now. Oh, here we go. I see a flashing right lane closed, 1 mile. Okay. What question was I answering? Off-season assistant movement. There will be some. The assistant position coach thing makes this all interesting. We have two coaches at every position. Like, James White just left to be the head coach at Bennett Academy. So Thad Ward was the main running backs coach, and James Wyatt was the assistant running backs coach. So you could see maybe the main position coach at some spot getting let go and the assistant promoted to the main spot with a new assistant brought in. I could see some of that. I've been asked this question. I think I addressed this on the radio this week. I've been asked this question about Barry Lunny several times. Of like, where do you think he'll go? And like, I've had no inkling that he'd be going somewhere. My main concern was if another program poached him as their coordinator. You know, somebody gets the LSU job and then hires Lunny as their offensive coordinator. Because they could pay a lot more. But like, if he's looking for jobs, maybe he wants to be a head coach. Maybe that's the whole thing. Maybe he's looking at this. But it's like, you know, Eastern Michigan head coach job comes open and they can pay $1.2 million for a head coaching job. And Illinois is willing to pay $1.4 to keep him as offensive coordinator. And the new head coach at Arkansas offers him $1.7 million to be the offensive coordinator or whatever. It just feels like the whole, like, need to go off and be a head coach at a MAC school in order to then get a big job in the future thing isn't as much anymore. And maybe he could get a bigger job someday after proving he can have consistent offices in Illinois. So, I don't know. Until people started asking me, like, where do you think Lonnie would go? I had no inkling that, like, he would go. Like, I had no sense that, like, he'd be some big candidate. It's not an insult. It's just, you know, there have been good offensive coordinators at Minnesota, and they've been poached by, you know, Penn State goes and grabs Minnesota's offensive coordinator because they want that offense. And that's where my concern is. That haven't been many Big Ten coordinators getting like MAC or Sun Belt jobs that I can remember. So, anyway. My biggest focus on that is I think they'll make a few changes at some positions and maybe restructure some things, and it'll be interesting to see which of those assistants are kept. Next question. I did the where are you parking thing. Oh. Let's not miss this exit here in... Let's make sure we stay on 39 North here. I'm at that big interchange in Rockford, if you're wondering. That's another thing I focused myself. I made myself, hey, when you're on... You know, I've done the thing where I'm driving around Bloomington and I just miss 39 North. I'm just not paying attention to where that exit ramp is. So I've had a, don't just get thinking about other things and wind up in Freeport. This is an important drive. So I'm now on that ramp just south of Rockford to loop around on 39 and then go north. So I guess I'm headed back east right now. Okay. Are you bringing home any spotted cow? I didn't think about it. Maybe I should. I don't know. Like, lately, I'm not a huge beer guy. Here comes my no free ads. I bounce back and forth between two local beers. Riggs, Hefeweizen, and Triptych Brewery's Dank Meme. And, like, Dank Meme is the only beer in the fridge right now that I, like, will go to. And, I mean, I like Spotted Cow. I've had it before. Somebody brought it to a tailgate last month, and I enjoy it. But, yeah, if I had Spotted Cow in the fridge, and if I had Dank Meme in the fridge, I'm going Dank Meme. I just am. Okay. Let's see here. Just watching some street signs. We are looking. There's obviously more traffic now. We're being safe. We're being safe. We're just being safe. Okay. And I just have to make sure I don't, you know, mistakenly get on 90 and end up in Chicago. Wait, am I on 90 now? Did we just join 90? I think I am on 90 now. And then they split off and 39 goes north. Let me check my ETA here. On Waze, using the Waze app, folks. Estimated arrival at that house, 6:16. 6:16. That would give me 24 minutes to walk, get the credential. And I mean, Waze usually factors in traffic it's seeing. So that's probably anticipating traffic in and around Madison. Yeah, I have 72 miles left. If I'm going 79 most of the way, I should do that in under an hour, but it's saying an hour too. So it's, yeah, it's anticipating for me. It's anticipating some traffic in that 6:16. Look, we're positive. I don't want to jinx it, but we're feeling good right now. We're an hour and... gosh, I'm an hour away? This is going fast. I have no idea where that paused. In fact... like, it was paused, and I just resumed. So, this is the same recording. So, you don't even know that it paused. I just talked for a long time. I don't even know what question we were on when it paused. Did it just happen? I have no idea. Yeah, no idea. No clue. Where do we go? Well, I just talked for a long time. Somebody was burning leaves in Rockford. Did you hear that part? Burning leaves in Rockford. I went on this whole thing about burning leaves making me think of Keith Jackson and eating a bowl of chili after Reagan leaves and burning the driveway in 1981 with my mom and dad. Anyone? Anyone? Did I miss all of that? It was really good. Anyone? I mean, this could have paused 20 minutes ago. I have no idea. I guess I just hit it with my hand at some point. Recording now. Alright, well, we'll just keep going. I got about like 20 more minutes, about in a half hour, and then I really need to buckle down and make sure I'm on the right road. And make sure I'm making all the exits and everything else. So, yeah. No idea where that paused. No idea if this is a repeat question. No idea what's happening. Do you have thoughts on how to build back? I'm sorry. You have thoughts on how to build the back the team to get a victory mentality as a fan base? Yes, I have thoughts. And I kind of coined the whole, like, you know, people, the way to think about this is back the team to get a victory. There's a line in our school song that tells us what to do. How do we build that mentality in the fan base? This will sound harsh, but it's the only answer I see. The voices trying to hang on to the hate the team to gain a victory, to the take shots at the team to gain a victory, to the raise an eyebrow at the team to gain a victory. They just need to be ignored. There is a large faction of our fan base that believes that that is the way to make your team better. That scorn is the key. And the more scorn you can pile, the more pressure it keeps. It is the unique thing about our fan base. I've written about it for 15 years. The Illini fan base is uniquely negative. It has started to go away, obviously, with the wins. But as you saw during the Washington game, people will go immediately back to Everyone sucks. Everything sucks. These players suck. These coaches don't know what they're doing. And we just can't help ourselves. Like, I'm avoiding trying to say this. I'm just going to say it, okay? If there's a voice, it doesn't have to be an media member or a blogger or a podcaster or anything else. If there is an input source into your brain that you notice is simply, here's what I would do if I was coach, and that's the only card, mute that voice from your life. Other fan bases self-police that kind of stuff. Other fans that are loud about, like, well, this is stupid, and with those, you know, when you have winning seasons and you're way above the expectations of your program, other fan bases will self-police and, like, no, we're not turning into that fan base. We're not doing this. There is still support for this team here. These people are dumb. There's a lot of self-policing of, like, look, if you're just a mental 14-year-old and you throw a fit when something goes wrong in a game, maybe you're just not cut out for college football. And we all are trying to move this program in a solid direction, and you're just doing that. Our fan base doesn't really do that. We have this hesitation to be like, no, that person shouldn't. No, I don't want that information in my head. I don't want that level of negativity, taking shots at players. You know, just every single mistake is, oh, of course. You know, we just don't do a good enough job, social media, actual media, of maybe treating that stuff as poison and cancer. They're just like, well, you know, he has a point. You know, so to me, again, I've written about it 1,000 times. I don't have to repeat myself. Back the team to get a victory is the way in college sports, especially now when money matters. People are on board. The tailgate lots are full. The line for the tailgate lots at 6:30 a.m., you would not believe. You would not believe. The passion is there and this and that. And really the next step is, the realization that the reaction after Washington was terrible, and that it was, the fans were flamed. The flames were fanned by fans. Fanning the flames? That's the title of an article. Fanning the flames. That should have been my post-game article. You know, I wanted to say these things out loud, but, like, you guys realize that Coach Bielma sees this stuff, right? Like, I don't understand why fans aren't angry at some prominent voices that are talking like he's an idiot. Like, you guys want him to, like, take another job or something? Like, what? Why are fans not out there like, hey, shut your mouth. You don't matter. You're making things worse for us. Yes, we lost to Washington. Yes, we're disappointed. But to act like there were massive mistakes and all of this, oh, and his buddy Aaron Henry just can't get rid of, what? Do you understand that this is the fifth time in 100 years we've had a winning season after an 8-win season? Does anyone get that? Like, my main emotion toward all this stuff is, like, do these people want to run out of town? Is this the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life? So we just don't do a good job of, when that stuff is out there, putting harsh judgment on it and be like, dude, I am unfollowing you, muting you. I never want your information in my head again. And if this makes you mad, if me saying this, please, I'm telling you, mute me, delete me, like get rid of me. If you think I'm wrong in the how way I view Back the Team to Gain a Victory, if you think like, oh my God, well then you're just a bunch of followers and the team will fall apart and there won't be any pressure on the administration. If that's your thinking, please, I'm begging you, unfollow me. Like, I'm fine with it. I know how I feel about this stuff. If you think it's over the top, I'm good with that. Go away. I'm good with that. But the fact that people aren't more, you know, it's that little, like, it's like, I don't know. And we live in that space. And the players see it, and the coaches see it. I don't get it. I don't understand why people are so drawn to this. Like, I don't know. Me, man, it's pretty. The theory I've always put out there is that the majority of this is just Chicago-specific professional sports fans. You know them, I know them, maybe you're one of them. Maybe you've overcome it, maybe you haven't, but if you didn't grow up in Chicago, like I grew up in the St. Louis area, Metro East, just know that your sports opinions are jarring at first. Because no one else blames, like, not Philly fans, not Boston fans, not New York fans. No one else, like, specifically blames ownership more than Chicago sports fans. Again, I'm just coming as a, you know, and I got to call, you know, I was a football Cardinal fan, then I was a Rams fan, then I was a, you know, I'm a Cardinals, Blues, this and that. And when you get to Champaign and you meet a bunch of sports fans and you have sports conversations, it's so in your face with, like, Wirtz family, McCaskey, stupid Reinsdorf. You know, it's everything is like owner. And again, as a St. Louis guy, it just hits you like, what? I'm not sure if I know who the Cardinals owner is. And it's that level of, your dad told you that the path to the Blackhawks getting good again is the stupid family needs to blah, blah, blah. And it's the fans' job to keep pressure on the McCaskies to make blah, blah, blah. And it just bleeds over in Illinois. And so everybody thinks they have this responsibility to never let up pressure. If you let up even a little bit, the team will fall apart. And at times like this, it does the opposite. And it could harm us, and no one cares. Like, I will see a tweet, and I will think, this is about to get 30 hate responses. Like, stop it, stop talking like this. And nobody says anything. It's just, it's hard for me to comprehend that people don't realize that we're at the point with these programs, basketball currently number 8, football currently number 21, that really dark, angry, keep the pressure up stuff is harmful. Like, we're really putting our programs at risk. And people just kind of accept it, like, oh, you know, I just got a negative fan base. No, man, it needs to be rooted out. I understand why people are like that after the last 30 years, especially with football, especially with the fall of basketball in the 2010s. But it's dangerous, man. It's dangerous. And it's just... when Missouri fans believe in Drinkwitz more than Illinois fans believe in Bielma, there's a problem, man. That's my 2 cents. Okay. What do we got? Maybe, I'm in Wisconsin now. Maybe, 20 more minutes of this? We'll see. Let me quickly go through some of these. What 80s player does David Mirkovic remind me of? David reminds me of 80s. 80s, 80s, 80s. Is this a Illini or is this all college basketball? 80s, David. 80s. Like, my first reaction is Big George Montgomery, but Big George is taller. But Big George is like, especially that last year. Yeah, I'm always doing this thing where I'm like, don't say that. Don't say that. Don't say that. Don't say that. I mean, he reminds me of Ephraim Winters. Sorry, he reminds me of Ephraim Winters. That's a huge, like, big, that was a top 25 recruit. That was a McDonald's All-American. Wasn't he MVP of the McDonald's All-American? You know, had us in the Elite Eight in 84. I gotta say Ephraim. Yep, 80s player Ephraim. This is the speed round, so I should have, you know. Basketball question, how do you rank Big Ten regular season, Big Ten tourney, round of 32, Sweet 16, Elite Eight, Final Four? Good question. I am Big Ten regular season way ahead of Big Ten tournament championship. You hang a banner for one, you don't. Well, you hang an individual banner for one, you put the year on the tourney champs banner for the other, and that tells that story. A Big Ten regular season to me is right even with a Sweet 16 and possibly ahead. Big Ten regular season is a big deal to me, mostly because in the 80s, Henson only won in 84, and it was this elusive thing. Even the 89 team didn't win the Big Ten. It was just this elusive thing that we went from 84 to 98 without winning the Big Ten. When we won the Big Ten in 98, Jerry Hester, Matt Heltman, RIP, Kevin Turner, Jerry G, Brian Jones. When we won that in 98, it was just this huge, finally. And that's similar to the Sweet 16 in 2024. Similar, finally, kind of thing. So I would put those two even, maybe Big Ten slightly ahead. And then obviously up from there, Elite Eight is everything. Elite Eight is better than Big Ten regular season title. And then obviously Final Four and national title. Obviously. I'm doing that thing right now. I gotta be careful. I'm doing that thing where there's so many cars, I took it off of cruise. And then when I'm talking into this thing, like, I noticed when I was ranting about no one cares that people are trashing our programs and coaches online, and no one is like, hey man, shut up. Or at least muting them and like making them insignificant. I was going 86 miles an hour. I was like fired up about what I was talking about, and suddenly I'm going 86. So, you know, the one thing that could cost me here, my ETA gives me 25 minutes to walk to the stadium and get in. One thing it cost me is a ticket. So, I can't be going to 86 in Wisconsin. can't do it. Okay, speed round. What else is speed round? These players with this. Would you rather Big Ten football championship or basketball national championship? Basketball national championship. One football guy, 1-on-17, blah, 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 blah. Basketball national championship. A national title for an Illinois team that's above any possible other thing. My statement, my slogan has always been, before I die, a Rose Bowl win, which is now basically essentially the Big Ten championship, because getting to the Rose Bowl is a whole playoff thing. But I always said, win the Rose Bowl, win a national title. Those are the two. Who's the player you most want to return for 2026 in football who may go pro? Xavier Scott. Without question, Xavier Scott. He never redshirted in 2022, which means he has a year available. He didn't. He only put two and three quarter games on film this year before the injury. Probably in one of those would be a fifth round pick, but if he came back and had a great fifth year, could be a second round pick. One of those guys who could make a ton of money for himself. And I get it if he wants to go pro. I mean, he considered it last year. His first team all Big Ten corner, but hands down, Xavier Scott. I feel like I even sometimes forget. We are missing our only first team all Big Ten guy from last year. That's a big deal. That's a big deal. First team all Big Ten with 18 teams. It's hard to be one of the two cornerbacks named to first team all Big Ten. You could just pick the Ohio State cornerbacks every year, but X was there last year, and we haven't had him for the Big Ten season this year. So without question, Xavier Scott. Really hope we can figure that out. Let's see. There's one more question. I think it was in another thread. Let me see if I can go back to that. What are the ideal food groups for road trips? Okay. We'll close with this, and then I'll make sure I'm getting to Madison. Food groups. I mean, I think of that, like, I'm supposed to say fruits and vegetables are fourth. Food groups. Food groups of road trips. Food groups of road trips. Food groups. What are the ideal food groups of road trips? Well, listen, I'm just going to go with ideal foods for road trips, because I did this on another podcast once, the old bag 06 of this, and I listed out how I road trip with food. I'm just going to throw them out there, and you're going to see how much a big guy thinks about food. Kind of the ultimate is combos, pretzel cheddar cheese. No, get out of here with your pizza combos, pepperoni. Go away with any type of cracker. It is pretzel cheddar only. Oh, there's a cop. How fast am I going? Oh, 72 and a 70. Look at you. Look at you. Not avoiding getting pulled over in Wisconsin. Good job, Robert. So yeah, enjoy a good combo. If I need to stay awake, I go with a bit of honey, because chewing a bit of honey and all the stuff in your teeth that lasts for at least 12 minutes after chewing up a bit of honey is the thing that keeps me awake on road trips. So I will go with bit of honey anytime I'm, oh man, I'm not going to get there until 12:30. I'm going to get pretty tired. Boom, bit of honey, chew it up. That's my elixir for staying open. Staying open, staying awake. I don't do many chips on the road. If I stop for fast food, I've mentioned before that I think it's kind of brilliant what Casey's does with the little tray for their pizzas, because it allows you to eat pizza on the highway. If you've not been to Casey's, it's just individual slices in a little white cardboard tray with the open end to it. I always spin the piece of pizza around. I'll stop at a Casey's for a slice of breakfast pizza. It's on a little triangle white piece of cardboard. I will spin 180 so that the triangle is coming out the back. I will hold the point of that cardboard, and I will just slowly slide it off the back end of the cardboard into my mouth. No holding the pizza, no real grease, just holding cardboard, sliding pizza in my mouth. That's a solid, gotta stop for gas, need something to eat. How about a slice of breakfast pizza slid off the back end? Drinks, I should probably drink some of this right now. See if you can tell what I'm opening here. That little hiss came from a Diet Mountain Dew. You should know this about me by now. In the morning, it is coffee. In the afternoon, is Diet Mountain Dew. In the evening, it is Powerade Zero Mixed Berry. And I keep this one bottle of water that I'm drinking intermittently throughout the day. Coffee in the morning, one Diet Mountain Dew after lunch, evening, Powerade Zero, mixed berry, over and over and over and over and over and over again. So, you know, it's 5:43 p.m., which means we're just finishing off the afternoon DMD, and when I get to my hotel, if they don't have Powerade Zero in the little container there, in the lobby, in the little place where you can, little market, I'm going to be mad. I'll have to drink a purple Gatorade, and it'll make me mad all night as I'm writing. Because I don't write well without Powerade Zero mixed berry. Blue. Let's see. Road trip. If I want a... I can just go to the speed round here. If I need something like, need to go Little Debbie, I'll go Star Crunch on a road trip. Easy to eat out of the pack. Like, I enjoy an oatmeal cream pie, but for whatever reason, Star Crunch is my jam. If I need to go Hostess, probably going Honey Bun. Yeah, I won't shy away from a Honey Bun. Chips. If I'm at a gas station, I need road trip chips. It's probably Ruffles cheddar and sour cream, but that's not a big, like, I'm not a, like, oh man, I need a sleeve of Pringles, or I'm not that guy. I'm not a, I need Oreos or chips. I'm not that guy. But if I need a snack, I mean, on a road trip, it's combos, pretzel, cheddar cheese. You know, when you get married, your wife has her things she likes. So sometimes we'll share. Her go-to is the jalapeno kettle-cooked chips. Her whole, like, if she doesn't eat chips that much, but when she does... Jalapeno kettle cooked over and over and over and over. And so, you know, maybe those will be in the car. I'll have some of those. Maybe the, oh, there's another cop. They're looking for me. They want to take me down. Obviously, the easiest, like the number one pick when I did that draft of road trip foods, the other number one pick for Ryan, who I was doing it with, I believe he took the Crunchwrap Supreme, and he made great points of like it's built for road trip food. Like, let's take the ingredients from Taco Bell and make it handheld so you can drive and eat it. I can't argue with any of those words. So I do, you know, I will follow his lead on that. But yeah, I mean, the main dog is the combos and the bit of honey. Bit of honey takes forever to chew. I got like a crown on the left side of my mouth. Bite into a bit of honey, I'm always worried the crown's gonna like pop right off. But it doesn't. I'm trying to think if there's anything else. I'm walking through the gas station mentally right now. Yeah, if I pull off at an exit, I'll want a Taco Bell for a dinner. Just, you know, you can't, I'm not gonna try to eat, you know, like I'm bad. I enjoy a double stack from Wendy's. It's a little burger you can eat on the road. It's probably the best burger to eat on the road, but just something's gonna drip ketchup on my shirt. I'm not doing that while driving. I need something like tiny and handheld if I'm gonna do a burger. So yeah, I feel like I'm missing a big one. Like, you always do these lists and then I'll stop recording and be, wait, how did I not say? But I'm just thinking through recent road trips. Yeah, it's funny. I just saw, so I'm in Wisconsin. They have Quick Trip. It's not the QT. It's not the QUIK trip based out of Oklahoma. You see them all everywhere in St. Louis. This is the Wisconsin version of the KWIK trip. And, since Tyler is tracking me here tonight, and since I was just with him at the basketball game, since he's writing about the basketball game right now, I should mention that his road trip food are the donuts from Quick Trip. You cannot drive past a Quick Trip without getting like six of those sour cream donuts or whatever. But yeah, I think that covers it. I have no idea what we missed when we paused. I have no idea. It might have happened 3 seconds before I noticed that it wasn't recording, or it could have happened 12 minutes. I have no idea. So sorry if your question was in the part that I missed, but we're an hour and a half in. Let's check the time on the, check the old. Back to the old Waze. The Waze app says I am 29 minutes out. It is 5:49. That puts me there at 6:18. Okay, so it's increased a little for anticipated traffic around Madison. Okay, but I still think I can do it. All right, I think that's it. Thank you for sharing this with me for an hour and a half. By the time you listen to this, the game will be over and you'll know if we won or lost. We better win. Thanks for hanging out. Go Illini.